good for the environment. And Wesley continued on about the pipeline.
Well, in my opinion, everything is kind of a mixed bag. There's nothing perfect in this life, you know, and engineering especially. So there is a carbon a footprint for the production of a lot of these cars. Lithium batteries that are in the Teslas require a significant carbon input and require mining of a relatively rare material such as lithium. A lot of people are very concerned that if a major portion of the world shifts over to lithium-based electric cars, we will run out of our supply of lithium. And so there's a lot of battery design going on. People are trying to figure out how to replace lithium with something like aluminum. Everything is kind of a mixed bag. You got to figure the pluses and the minuses, and you also have to figure in the little fudge factors of, you can't just be optimistic about everything, because engineering never works in an optimistic way. You have to have plan B, C, D, and E, and F. So all these things have their benefits, but they also have their problems and the prices you pay. And once again, I keep reminding people, energy, for the most part, can neither be created nor destroyed, just moved around. So you can't just suddenly get energy out of water. You have to put energy into water to be able to take energy out of what comes from that water. So, you know, it would be nice if we didn't have to, but we do. Mustn't disobey the conservation of mass energy.
It was difficult to copy you, Roy. But, you know, you want to make the environment better. You know, people in Germany make these long-distance trains, hydrogen-powered trains. You just get on the train and go somewhere. You know, maybe it's better for people to drive cars less and take the transit more.
Well, yeah, mass transit is the best method overall. If we could build a good mass transit infrastructure, there would be a dramatic shift. Unfortunately, a lot of people want to drive a car or something very close to it. And so, unfortunately, you're not going to get the efficiencies of mass transit vehicles among the overwhelming number of the population. It's just, unfortunately, an aspect of mankind that I don't know of an easy solution around.
Jackson, I say it's mostly about the ecological footprint. You want to make the world a better place.
Most people say that they do, but when push comes to shove, unfortunately, they want to do all the things that they do that causes the carbon imprint to be greater. Rich, you wanted to say something?
Yes, Roy. Actually, unfortunately, mass transit has been letting us down, too. Case in point is right here in Nassau County and Suffolk County. Mass transit here is dismal. You can't get around with mass transit. You need a car on Long Island, WB2GXM.
Yeah, I mean, it's the chicken and the egg, unfortunately. And bureaucracies very often are the most inefficient means of getting anything done. Just purely as a theoretical construct, that if you wanted to amount of energy used in transportation, a well-run mass transit is a much more efficient method than one or two people in a car all the time. It breaks down for a whole bunch of reasons, people have built infrastructures for individual drivers. People like to be individual drivers. People vote for people who do things for individual drivers. Very few people, I think, do much in the way of extending mass transit. It's not particularly... They try and make it kind of sexy. They use maglevs and hydrogen and bullet trains. Usually those are not terribly cost-effective. The older technology often is more efficient, at least at this point in time, but it gives a little bit cachet to the concept, so, you know, they use what they got. But yeah, overwhelmingly, unfortunately, especially in America, we're a wide open place, it's relatively low density, And so mass transit is somewhat more problematic rather than in densely populated regions, say, Europe and places in Asia. So it's not going to be the ultimate solution, but it should be part of the equation, and it requires budgeting and people who know what they're doing for a living to actually do it. And sometimes the two of those don't meet. Wesley.
Bringing something or in chemistry that would be rapid chemical combination of a substance with oxygen involving the production of heat and light. The sieve that I use for splitting for production of nitrogen 2 and 2 is actually splitting air. In hydrogen fuel cell, there is also a membrane. There is no combustion at all, no heat created. And if you were to ask where to get the electricity from Niagara Falls, or even there are certain concepts and there are small working nuclear power station that operates based on different principles, and they are absolutely safe, or seen as absolutely safe, in comparison to those used today. Hydrogen fuel cell vehicles run on hydrogen gas, let me drop, which reacts in a fuel cell, but its construction and operation is more similar to the hybrid electric vehicle than to a battery electric vehicle. But we have no heat and no combustion. A hydrogen fuel cell vehicle has a hybrid battery pack and electric motor generators replacing the ICE, internal combustion engine, with the hydrogen fuel cell. So that's what I was trying to explain. Zero emission. And they have a motorcycle. I have it somewhere in here. They have trucks, heavy trucks. Toyota is leading into it. And America is a little bit lagging behind. They have only one truck in this area. And Tesla is nowhere to switch, or at least to start in parallel, the hydrogen cars, which are less expensive and more efficient for us. Enter a ship.
Let me just read you a little thing that popped up on my Google. It says, hydrogen fuel cells produce electricity by combining hydrogen and oxygen atoms. The hydrogen reacts with oxygen across an electrochemical cell similar to that of a battery to produce electricity, water, and small amounts of heat. Many different types of fuel cells are available for a wide range of applications. So, it is an oxidation reduction reaction. It requires oxygen, which is in the atmosphere, so you don't have to kind of supply your own, but it does require oxygen. If you take your hydrogen cell and deplete all the oxygen from the area, your cell will not function. So it is the oxidation reduction of hydrogen and oxygen into water molecules, some electricity, and some waste heat, because nothing is 100% efficient.
In one of the links that I have sent you, there is a little animation, and also in the video that I have sent you, it is shown how the PEM fuel cell works. As you recall, I said there is no heat, but actually I meant there is no heat from combustion. Of course, in the process, you have, from one side, you have electrons, and then you have a delivery of H2. The fuel is passing in and going out, if it's too much of excess of it, if it's not regulated. From the other side of that, you have H2O, which is the water that comes from H+, through the membrane. And because the electron is pushed to travel, it cannot they penetrate the membrane. That's how the electric current is being born. So, and yes, there is some amount of heat, but not combustion heat. And the air used that is passing through the membrane because the vehicle is moving is actually cooling it down. So I don't see the problem here. N2XGS.
I'm just pointing out that you kind of idealize this reaction. It's not a very complicated one. Again, it is simply putting energy into a potential chemical bond and then taking it out again. It's like pulling on a spring, increasing the spring tension, and then using the spring tension for some kind of work. Usually, almost all the time, it is never 100% efficient. Part of the transfer of energy requires you to lose some of it in waste heat. So they're all inefficient to a degree, some more than others. You still need an energy source to split the water in the first place. The water, the hydrogen and the water are simply carriers of potential energy between the electrical generator breaking the bonds and the car putting them back together and getting kinetic energy from them. So, you know, it's not 100% efficient. It does produce some degree of heat. It does produce some energy loss. If you were to take the electricity straight into a vehicle, you would probably have a little bit more efficient use of the electricity than if you went by way of chemical bonds, which introduce another stage of inefficiency. So it's an interesting concept. It still requires a massive infrastructure, in my opinion, of safe hydrogen. A lot of people are frightened of hydrogen. They remember the blimp that blew up, even though it has nothing much to do with the hydrogen. But still, it's an explosive gas. You're going to have problems building gas stations that are full of hydrogen tanks, I assure you.
A few things that I have a problem with. First, if you can go to proton exchange membrane fuel cell in Wikipedia. Proton exchange membrane fuel cell in Wikipedia. And it says, the distinguished futures include lower temperature pressure ranges, 50 to 100 degrees. Now, it's in Celsius. 100 degrees in Celsius is the temperature of boiling water. Do you remember what is the temperature of the combustion engine?
Talking to me about degrees of heat. I'm not saying that this reaction produces the heat put out by a combustion engine. I'm simply saying it does produce waste heat.
Okay, yeah, you've got a valid point. So what? If you are giving something for nothing, would you care how much of it you use? Or something for very low price, would you care how much of it you use? Yeah, if you want to save $1 or $2, we're talking about inexpensive parts. We're talking about the cheapest possible technology. We're talking about one single charge for 1,000 miles versus a Tesla 600 miles for the luxury version for $50,000 and $15,000 car, Toyota. You can check it. N2XGS.
AC2GS. Well, Wesley, all I can tell you is having been born and brought up in Brooklyn, if someone offers me a deal that's too good, I look at it every which way, because I don't trust people, generally speaking, until I can figure out what's going on their side. You've got to scale these things up properly. Whenever any kind of technology is discussed by people promoting it, they give you a very, very rosy picture where none of the little nits and picks are mentioned. You see that with good old Elon Musk all the time. He brings out people dressed in a leotard. He says it's a robot. He sticks a wire in a pig's head and he says it's brain control, all kinds of interesting nonsense. So you sometimes have to kind of tune up your PS meter and figure out that there's probably something that bothers them that they're not really discussing too much. And I think in the case of hydrogen-based cars, it is the enormous problem of developing a broad infrastructure of getting hydrogen stored near your neighborhood without too many people who are going crazy about a cell phone killing them. So if you think that Gen 5 cell phone towers are going to upset people, tell them that there's going to be a hydrogen tower in their neighborhood and see the response. So you got to look at both sides. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is a great new discovery. Maybe this is the answer. I think it's maybe part of the answer, but I don't think it's the entire answer.
VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
I heard that one of the problems with the hydrogen fuel cell in a car is having a tank where you can store significant quantities of hydrogen was just compressing the bejesus out of it, storing in the tank doesn't give you the volume you need. Talking about having some way where hydrogen was evolved into some kind of material, but I think that was still undergoing research. There are some other problems with it too. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's inherently a volatile material that's difficult to handle in individual cases. On an industrial level, you can mitigate them. But on an average Joe, you know, sometimes they don't maintain their cars properly. So, you know, if it rusts, so be it. But if it explodes, people are going to get very, very upset. So, yes, I've also heard there are different storage technologies suggested. The old standby is highly pressured tanks, which are problematic for reasons that mentioned. But there are also materials, but not like activated charcoal, where gases can kind of take up the lattice of the empty spaces and be held relatively safe without high pressures being required. But again, I don't think that they have a fundamental solution for that. I think they're just kind of going right through it and saying, we'll figure it out. Don't worry.
Dr. Roy, I love your skepticism. Stay this way. You are such a safety valve for myself when to go too far. I do thank you for that. And again, I have a problem. Everybody of you listening now is sitting on the very much explosive tank with gasoline a few hours a day, and they don't think about it. Of course, they know how to deal with it, but you know how to deal with the hot water so to not get burned. You know how to deal with cigarettes because you don't want to get cancer. Some of the people do apply to the requirement, some of the people not. So you know how to deal with the electricity to not get electrocuted. So you could see so many dangers here. It's just that you know what you're dealing with. As far as the gas stations, you have not been into Europe for a long time, Dr. Roy, or have never been to Europe, maybe. Almost every station in Europe is prepared to tank the cars with the gasoline or with the natural gas. So they have the infrastructure already. There is a need to exchange and know what you're dealing with. So it's exchange the tank, and then you're dealing with the gas. It's just a little different gas. So the tank is approved by the European Council to be used, and that's how it works in Europe. There is a problem in the United States because we used to have so inexpensive gas compared to the gas that that is in Europe that is much, much more expensive. And we didn't prepare ourselves for that. But the concept looked very much promising as far as the efficiency of the hydrogen. It's not only a few percent, it's a few times more efficient than the gasoline provides. And 2XG.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
And the environmental byproduct of using that energy still has to be studied. I mean, bring it back 150 years ago. We rode a horse. We had two horses pulling us. We had four horses pulling us. Well, there were environmental gases produced that produced environmental allergies, just like we have environmental allergies now from gases that are produced by energies that we use for our transportation or our energy modes. But what were the environmental allergies from people who were being pulled by four horses? I'm bringing that in on a lighter note. Right now, what are the environmental allergies from, or has it been studied, what are the environmental allergies from the byproducts of using this latest technology? And another thing that was brought up that was, well, was where are the resources in minerals going to come from for all the battery technology coming up right now? I'm going to listen. Thank you, Roy, KD2FIU. Remember, the environmental allergy is caused by four horses.
WB2KW6.
Yes, Jeff.
Okay, in the back of my mind, something is bothering me about the storage of hydrogen. There's nothing more difficult to store. Well, I guess the only thing more difficult to store than hydrogen is helium. These are little teeny tiny molecules, as opposed to hydrocarbons, which are quite big things. So preventing leaks is going to be quite a challenge.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ken. Hydrogen has second diameter, helium because it has protons in it. The electromagnetic forces push the first valence ring closer to the nucleus. So hydrogen's just a little bit chubbier than helium. There's a lot of problems with hydrogen, unfortunately, and it's not a gas that's used by consumers that much. Natural gas is a completely different thing. And as far as gasoline is concerned, gasoline does not have to be stored under pressure. Hydrogen pronouncedly has to be put under pressure. So, you know, six to one, half a dozen the other. I mean, you could equally say that, you know, a big pile of coal has a lot of inherent energy in it. It could explode. But, you know, all things being equal, I would think that a hydrogen leak is going to explode faster than a gasoline vapor leak, and that's faster than, and I don't know how you start a fire with coal unless you lit it. So, you know, they all store energy, but they're more volatile. And hydrogen is difficult to contain and more volatile.
AC2PL.
Yes, Jeff.
How you doing, Roy? Don't forget that hydrogen has a positive Joule-Thomson coefficient, so that when it expands through a nozzle, it actually heats up and will self-ignite.
Okay, good point, Jeff. I mean, unfortunately, the devil is in the details.
Yeah, Roger, that's one pretty important detail. Because if you've got propane just, you know, kind of bleeding out through a hole, it's just going to cool off the whole system. If you've got hydrogen bleeding out through a hole, it's going to heat up the whole system until it ignites and turn it into a rocket.
Leslie. Two things. The last one.
I have a tank with nitrogen. Nitrogen, two liquid nitrogen. They can't be totally enclosed. They have to leak. The cars, they're being used with combustion engines, but they are powered by the gas instead of gasoline, mostly in Europe. In the United States, I believe they use it too. They also have a mechanism that is regulating the pressure. And I don't believe, I'm not really very much educated in this area how that is being handled in hydrogen, but if major manufacturers are doing that, that means that they found that problem before us. As far as the side effects that were mentioned here before, no side effect, zero, zippo, none, zero, nothing. But that's my opinion, and Dr. Roy has different opinion, and that's why we had a problem with the term combustion. He thinks probably that in the broad picture, there is somewhere a combustion that is making the electricity that is used to split the air and get the HO2, hydrogen, sorry. So I propose, if we're dealing with the Niagara Falls, get the electricity from there, which all New York does, we can use that clean electricity to get the hydrogen, and then that hydrogen will be turned into the water. But we have, I would love if somebody point at those four horses or two horses a negative impact on the environment. We have so much of negative impact right now from the gasoline, and nobody complains because they have no choice. Now we have a choice. As far as what people could do or should do is much different story. The driven factor for the economy is money. That's why so many nuclear plants that could be completely safe are not being researched or used or built because it's not good for the money. And to a chair.
It's not quite, in my opinion, humble opinion here, that it's the money. It's what it is human beings. If you tell a human being, we would like to build a nuclear reactor next door, we'll get a lot of noisy people saying a lot of terrible things about you, your parents, your grandparents, and your great-grandparents. There's a lot of trigger points that business has learned, unfortunately, not to go anywhere near. And one of them is nuclear energy. We keep talking about fusion technology. It's right around the corner. It's been right around the corner for 50, 60 years. It will continue to be right around the corner, probably, unfortunately, for at least 20, 30 years. So the problem in this case, I don't think, is the money, but it is humanity in general. They want to have their cake and eat it too. They want cheap, easily available, easily reproducible energy on tap. They don't want the prices to go up. They want them to go down. They want everything to be plentiful and replenishable. And life isn't like that, unfortunately, so you have to pick your poison. Be it nuclear fission, or as an outbreak, as a secondary type of thing, looking into different technologies that do new fission, thorium and such, or natural replenishable energy sources or what have you. The water electrolysis is not a miraculous thing. It's simply a means to store energy like a battery. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but there are technological aspects to the energy source. You are still using hydrogen that's combining to oxygen in order to get the electrical potential energy out of the hydrogen molecule. So you have to factor that in, and if things go boom, a lot of people get upset. And if everyone is traveling around with a pressurized tank of hydrogen and one goes boom, you're going to hear a lot of people complaining. And that's, I think, one of the big problems that business has of investing billions of dollars on something that they'll end up being sued for, like asbestos, for the rest of their lives.
KD2FIU?
Yes, George.
Yeah, good analogy there. We're bringing up the asbestos. And we're always going to be confronted with contamination. And that's why I had brought up what I said about 125 to 150 years ago. I didn't mean that simply as being a jokester. I mean, like, just picture, being in a coach or being sitting on that while four horses are running in all the dust of the road and the environmental excretion from the animals coming at you in your face and what it's doing to us as human beings. Of course, this has always traveled with us as we've gone forward. And we want to advance with what we want to do. Still, we're here talking about extracting and using either chemistry, molecular breakdown, or atomic breakdown that is familiar with our planet. I believe eventually we will be bringing in energy from other sources from outer space. I'm not saying this being a jokester again. I'm saying this that we're radio operators. We know what goes on coming through our atmosphere, going through all the layers of our atmosphere, and knowing what the sun's rays can do for us. I'm not saying the sun is the only source. But I was joking with that in a certain sense, saying that we have got to be aware of how things pollute us. Thank you, Roy. KD2FIU.
You're welcome, George. And there's always going to be a segment of the population who will ponder that, and sometimes over-ponder it. There are people out there who think that 5G, 30 gigahertz radio waves produce, God forbid, COVID. So, sometimes they overdo it, sometimes they underdo it. We never quite get it right. In the end, hopefully we do, but not at the beginning. So this is always going to be a factor. Now, in the hydrogen cell that Wesley is discussing, the cell itself is a relatively safe device. It combines hydrogen gas, which is relatively benign if you don't have a lot of it, with oxygen, which is all around us, to produce very safe H2O water. Most of our body is made up of water, and a little bit of waste heat and some electricity to run motors if you're so inclined. The problem comes with the storage of the hydrogen fuel, the transfer of the hydrogen fuel, production of the hydrogen fuel, primarily the way that I personally see it. It is different than natural gas. It is certainly different than gasoline. It's much more difficult to keep under pressure under a lot of different circumstances. And although industrial protocols allow them to use hydrogen, they invest a lot of time and expertise and money to maintain it in a relatively safe environment. When you take it out on the road with Joe Public, a lot of times people don't do things that make any sense. So you're not going to get the same protocols. You're going to get people drilling holes into pressurized tanks eventually. It's just the way we're kind of designed, unfortunately.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George, I think I was talking over you.
No, I got you. I'm sorry, I was trying to come in. Can I come back in?
Certainly, George.
There are a lot of people who don't live in urban areas. And those people who live in urban areas are not really concerned with the environmental impact that we are exposed to. A small amount of carbon emissions is irrelevant to them. And think about it. They are not exposed through the environmental effects on their bodies like we are. As you go further east on Long Island, it smells better. As you go further north, upstate from New York, it smells better. And so far with west in those areas. Talk about people in central parts of the country, they're just happy with the energy sources that they have. So we're going to talk about the whole world, yes. The whole world in the long term, yes. But talk to the people who are exposed or not exposed to environmental reaction or energy. They're not concerned with it. KD2FIU.
I agree with you, many of them aren't. I wouldn't use a wide brush stroke and say none of them. But as William Shatner mentioned when he got off his little ride into space and looked down upon our little blue marble, we're all on the same world. And although the immediate effects of pollution and other problems tends to be somewhat localized in the extreme, in the generalization, we're all kind of screwed. The weather patterns that have been changing, the once-in-a-century, once-in-two-century floods and wind conditions and fires and all these other things affect people who can breathe their air and it's nice and clean and clear, but they're still having an environmental impact. Now, I'll give you that a lot of those people say, it's not real. It's the news. Or they'll say, it would happen anyway. It had nothing to do with us or the petroleum giants or such. But it does affect everyone in different ways.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
What they're saying is it doesn't affect them. They know it eventually will. But what they're saying is it's your problem, man, where you live.
Well, you know, I think it's even more crazy than that. I don't think this is screwing you up, but it's not screwing us up because, you know, they live through, you know, you talk to the people in Texas, they live through freak winters, snowstorms, and floods, and all kinds of things. They lose their electricity. They sort of know there's something going on. So it's not our problem, it's their problem as well, but I think a lot of the financial types and political types have made the calculation that, you know, screw the next generation. They're not voting right now, and they're not buying gasoline. So we'll just kind of go for broke and hope that someone figures an answer after they're all 6 feet under.
KD2RY. Yeah, KD2FIU.
Yes, David first, and then George.
Well, you know, in the news circuit, on social media, television, we get a lot of word about the environment from people in the public eye. Very, very visible and very much heard. They say it's very important for the American people to do something about the climate change. And, you know, I just don't know if they're really going in the right direction. The idea is that the only way, you know, we reduce the pollution is to reduce the manufacturing and commerce in terms of the manufacturing. The pollution that comes out of it causes the climate change. I think the only thing that people can do you know, to make this better is to reduce their ecological footprint in any way that they can. This would make a difference. If people don't do that, no matter what kind of car you invent, the kind of transportation, kinds of manufacturing, you know, it's still going to stay the same or get worse.
George, next.
Thank you, Roy. I think what's got to be looked at here is what is the largest contributors and how are we going to control it? Fossil fuel use on the individual usage may not be the biggest contributor. Do we know whether it is industrial use that is the biggest contributor and the unrefined fuels? Do we know right now whether or not totally improving internal combustion engines to a point where we could utilize that energy from that type of chemistry is more useful in the future than utilizing the mined chemistry to produce batteries and then produce the electricity? And what energy is going to take to produce that electricity for that mined chemistry for the batteries to produce what could have been done with a smaller amount of fossil fuels in vehicles? And if our vehicles and home heating systems, the largest contributors to pollution, or is it industry that is the largest contributors to pollution? Without them being overly studied like the individual. So what I'm saying here, this is a circle just blaming it on the individual. And the individual has to change their lifestyle. Industry has got to change. And it's not going to be changing. I gotta let this drop. It's not just going to be changing what the individual does. And it's not only going to be changing what the major contributors in industry are going to be doing, or the major science. Why isn't the focus on where the energy is really, really contributing to? I mean, just look at it. One diesel truck, why does it have to be diesel, goes by on the highway, and all of these cars that can do 40 miles per gallon are behind it. And that one diesel truck blackens the air. I won't go any further with this. KD2FIU.
WP2EAV.
Ed, recognized. I just want to say a couple of words, and then we'll turn it over to Wesley, and then we'll turn it over to Ed. I just want to say that the internal combustion engine is probably as efficient as it's going to be. For a given amount of gasoline, it's going to produce a carbon footprint of carbon dioxide, no matter what you do. As far as diesel, it's probably, as far as I was aware, a cost saving. It's a little cheaper to run a truck on diesel than to run it on more refined gasoline. And since there's no kickback and no one fines you for that, they're just saving money. It's very complicated. Generally speaking, where all the greenhouse gases come from, and it's from a whole bunch of things. A lot of it, unfortunately, is natural gas sites. A lot of times, the seal on natural gas excavations breaks. No one notices, and a lot, I'm talking tons of natural gas are released into the air, and they're very effective greenhouse gases. And there's a lot of factories that produce a lot of carbon dioxide. In this world, rather than pointing blame back and forth at each other, we all kind of have to take our own personal responsibilities and do the best that we each can individually. And will there be people who are just miserable and not do it? Yes, there's always miserable people. But in spite of them, I think it's not only private people, it's not only industry, it's all of us. We're all screwing this up simultaneously, in my humble opinion. So let me first go to Wesley, and then we'll go to Ed.
I disagree.
So noted.
Okay, thank you very much. I do thank you for the time. Have a safe the technologies for the nuclear power that cannot have blow and pollute our atmosphere. And after those two gentlemen say their comments, a few words. There is a significant person there, Sabine Hossenfauer, a PhD in physics and presently research fellow at Frankfurt Institute of Advanced Studies. She's a singer as well. So she's a professor and she's a singer. But she's not a great singer, but she's absolutely great person. Anyhow, and ITER would be actually, I believe, best if Dr. Roy say a few words about it. He's not going to waste the time that I do because of imperfectly in English. Thank you.
Okay, Wesley, you kind of shifted the topic considerably. So when we get to the end of it, we'll talk about the physicist that has a YouTube channel. Ed, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I've been reading the mail for a while, and I want to point out a few things I'm not hearing. First of all, as well as cars are moving towards electric powered, so are trucks and trains. There is a lot of work being done now on electrifying truck traffic to get away from those filthy diesels, and also biofuels for diesels. Because diesel engines were designed originally 120 years ago to run off of vegetable oil, and that's what biofuel basically is. So there is an element of moving the biofuel, jet fuel to biofuel, electric trucks, electric buses, electric trains, locomotives, by things like solar and wind and other renewable power. The problem with solar and wind is you can't always count on them, which means that either there has to be some viable form of energy storage. Batteries are an obvious one, but they're not terribly effective. Hydrogen, turning electricity to hydrogen by electrolyzing water and then burning it to get back the water and energy, the viable approach, was not terribly efficient. But that brings back reference to nuclear power. Let me let you drop a second. For all of the tumult about nuclear power, everybody forgets how many thousands and thousands of lives fossil fuel power has caused in stuff like mine cave-ins, explosions, fuel trains derailing, all kinds of stuff that nuclear power really has not had. If you take Chernobyl out of the mix, the total death toll from extremely small. Fukushima had a fairly large death toll that had nothing to do with it. It was that panicky evacuation that killed a lot of senior citizens who were on death's door and couldn't survive the evacuation. That's where the casualties were in Fukushima. And as I think as Leslie brought out, there are some new nuclear chemistries that are much more controllable than the ones we've been using. Let's drop again. And yes, there has been movement towards electric battery aviation. The problem is it is viable for short range. Long range, you just cannot get density of power per pound that liquid fuels do, and they're working on biofuels, possibly hydrogen. So there is a lot of work being done in a lot of different areas. It's not just your personal cars. Far from it. And also, a large industry are also moving away slowly from fossil fuels towards renewables and the like. So there is a large move along those lines worldwide. A lot of it isn't, you know, in your face, but if you go into the more detailed literature, you see there's a lot of stuff going on, right?
Thank you, Ed. I agree completely with you. The problem, unfortunately, is not the real world. It's people's perception. There is, you know, if people kind of knew what coal, the coal industry, what misery It has brought on coal miners and all kinds of people attached and not attached to the coal industry. They try buckets of tears. But people are much more frightened of a relatively non-existent nuclear reaction than who knows how many tens and hundreds of thousands of people in the last, say, 150 years had a premature death due to the coal industry. But, you know, it's in perceptions that we have problems. Our citizenry is ill-informed, undereducated, and have problems with critical thinking. And so their gut perceptions are what drives them, unfortunately, in my humble opinion, anyway.
KG2R1.
Yes, David.
QSO, QSO. I see it like this. I see it, you know, there's too much consumption. People, you know, desiring too many things. And the production of those things, actually constructing them or putting them together or manufacturing them, and the pollution that results, the pollution which causes, you know, problems with the environment and the climate, you know, I think the only way it's going to get better is if people decide that they want to consume less, you know, and reduce their ecological footprint. Otherwise, you know, we'll have other problems with new technology and things just stay the same or get worse.
Soylent Green.
Soylent Green is people, George.
And look at the society that those people were.
Well, I mean, thankfully we haven't gone that road yet, but unfortunately we're fallible creatures. You know, listening, unfortunately, to the news every day brings that clear to view. Will people all make that decision? No. People, if they were drowning, 100% of people wouldn't decide to float or swim out of the water. So, you know, there's always going to be some people just saying, I refuse to believe there's water as they go flup, flup, flup. So everyone's not going to follow that. Hopefully enough people will follow it. There will be a general understanding of reality. Hopefully, maybe, sort of, industries looking to make money will find a way to use that to make money, which is still very possible. There are ecologically sound ways of making money for businessmen. So it takes everyone. Will it happen? Well, it's not going to happen for everyone. There's always going to be people who kind of are contrarian. But hopefully before it's irreversible, people will dial a little bit down or choose more ecologically viable methods. Ed was kind of mostly talking about renewable resources, although some of it was a low carbon footprint. And the problem that he stated is a very real one. Battery technology is not good. Every kind of week and a half, I read an article about how it's going to get better due to graphene and something else, but it's not good. The amount of energy density available in present technology batteries are insufficient for a lot of purposes that we would like to have. He mentioned airplanes. The amount of energy density is too low. In order to have enough energy density for a long-range plane trip, you would weigh it down with so much weight that it wouldn't fly anymore. So battery technology has to improve at that end. I really wish people would take a second look at thorium. I don't think it's the big that people are afraid of. People have to, unfortunately, be trained to be more rational. Lots of luck with that. I don't know how you start doing that except in school.
Roy, can I go back on something here?
Sure, George first. I think I heard Ed under George, so first George, then Ed.
Yeah, one thing, I mentioned Soylent Green as the social environment that the people were exposed to. Of course, we do remember what the nutritional value was about. They would just herd it into believing what they had to believe, and that was the way out. Another thing is, I'm not saying, and I did have a rebuttal there before with you that I did disagree, that we are not at the final edge of utilizing or even utilizing the research for a particular type of hydrocarbon energy. I'm not saying we must stick with it all the way, but, you know, we did go from 8 miles per gallon to 38 miles per gallon. There is no way we can't have 68 miles per gallon or 108 miles per gallon. We have gone so far. We have evolved with that so far. And I'll continue to say that these huge batteries that I'm seeing in automobiles is really, I don't know, I'm a little bit concerned about saying that this is what we should have 5 years from now or 10 years from now in our vehicles. So, you know, I don't want to repeat what I was saying there, but I'm not happy with the technology that is being put in front of us. We do have options. Continue to improve what we've had, and then go forward continuing to improve what we are proposing. KD2FIU, back to you, Roy.
Okay, George, so noted. Ed, you wanted to comment?
Yeah, first let me say that George is leaning somewhere, but not saying the obvious point. The hybrid car, I consider it to be a brilliant invention. Of course, cars have an inherent inefficiency that the hybrid car does do a lot. You get incredible fuel mileage. I think, like, you know, hybrid cars get like 50 miles per gallon now without, you know, without sweating, as a figuratively. And the beauty, one beauty of a hybrid car is, well, if you have to go a long cross-country trip, the fueling infrastructure is totally usable, whereas they're only first starting to come up online with electric stations, and there still is the problem of charging time, because I think a real fast charge with those power levels is inherently very dangerous. So I'm going to drop on here my main point I pulled in for. One interesting point with aviation, now when you're talking about cars, industry, trucks, trains, weight of batteries is a secondary problem. But with aviation, weight is a primary problem. And one big problem with battery-powered flight is that long-distance aviation depends upon the plane getting lighter by burning off fuel. If you've ever flown the Pacific, know that they go to 29,000 feet and slowly go up to 39,000 as they burn off fuel, and it changes the flight characteristics. And by the way, I know from first-hand experience, a Boeing 747-400 flying between Los Angeles and Brisbane, Australia, will burn 140 tons of hydrocarbons, right?
Yeah, I mean, as you point out, the devil is in the details. There's a lot of complications for different industries. Theoretically, I think if you somehow magically created an infinite density battery, even though you wouldn't have the benefit of the in-reach weight over a trip, you could probably still get to the other side. It's just the fact that, unfortunately, battery chemistry is not up to anything even close to that at this point. Yes, Wesley?
We have a few minutes left, and I think we've bitten the subject pretty badly. Could you go to Ether for a few minutes?
Okay, let me just give everyone a chance if they have something that they want to say at the wrap-up. This is the best time to do that. Okay, everyone seems to be talked out. This is a new one, Wesley. I can't recall a time where you started a topic and then you stopped the topic. But nevertheless, you want to discuss the physicist Sabine Hassenfelder. She has a YouTube channel, some very interesting topics.